Instead, keeping myself neutral, having no specific allegiance, having virtually no friends at the station, and I don't say that in a negative way at all, meaning I have not socialized or befriended people on a social level, so I have no axe to grind nor any favors to be beholding to. So my only concern is this. How can we make the station better? How can we have it survive longer? How can we have all of its members and diverse groups' interests represented? How can we provide reasonable, professional, and responsible and objective voices for all those who are underserved and who do not have a voice? And this requires time, patience, and a commitment by many different people. I believe that there is a need for lots of diversity, that we shouldn't have just one mindset. I believe that we can do all this and at the same time respect the original founders' proclamations. This is what he wanted to do. This is how he started, why he started, and where are we at today. I have just one partial advantage. That advantage is I've been at the station a long time. Therefore, I've seen the highs and lows. I have chosen in the past not to take these issues onto the air because I felt that it would have been more harmful than beneficial. This is, from my point of view, this is not the worst the station's ever been in. I can promise you I've seen worse. But it is not a good time now. And I'm going to try to, the best I can at least, bring disparate voices together. I believe that radio, WBAI Pacifica in particular, is about communication. We're in the communication business. And you communicate by dialoguing. Dialoguing where you take the most responsible, objective, and constructive voices and provide a forum for them so they can share their interest and their passions and their solutions. That's crucial. I don't believe that the solutions resolve on one side or the other. I believe that I have, from my own experience, speaking with responsible people such as Dan Coughlin, who was a former news director of Pacifica until he resigned, and speaking with Juan Gonzalez, as I have, and Tomas Morin, one of the board members, and Rob Robinson and Rabbi Aaron Kriegel. These are responsible people, Bernard White and Susan Wang. I invited Valerie Van Essler. In fact, I spoke with Valerie and asked her would she like to communicate, and unfortunately at this time she has declined. Hopefully she will open that up again. Al Lewis, a very conscientious person who has spent, quite frankly, the better part of his life fighting for social justice, not being fearless, not being fearful of the consequences of taking positions. Even back during McCarthyism, he was standing up for freedoms that very few people were doing so. He is a responsible voice. So I'm reaching out to everyone I know and offering them an opportunity to come on this program to share their points of view, as I am also those people who have been under attack. And I have taken the time and the effort to investigate many of the allegations, in fact, all the allegations I can, and about these attacks. And I can promise you, my investigation shows that in some cases, the charges leveled against people are simply inaccurate. They'll have an opportunity to present that information. I have sought only that which can be independently confirmed. And a little background. Pacifica's mission is not that of a normal commercial radio station. The foundation is meant to provide a form and voice for the voiceless, to provide a means of people who are in minority positions to have representation of their ideals and ideas brought forward. There are five stations. There are the station in Houston, Dallas, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and New York City. These are not community licensed stations. The license is held by a foundation, the Pacific Foundation. The foundation has a board. That board coming from backgrounds of different persuasions has a commitment as a non-profit entity. Its motion is not to make a profit. Its motion is to move these voices forward. Has at various times been ineffectual. I mean, there were times when the board was not doing its mission, plain and simple, and I don't think anyone would argue with that issue. There were times when the electricity was turned out at WBAI. I was there. There were times when the phones were turned off. I was there. There were times when we had virtually no equipment. In fact, we had 200 producers and didn't even have a single tape recorder to go out into the field. I brought my own tape recorders, my own DAP machines down and loaned them to the producers. I gave them to I gave some to Samori Marksman, Rosemary Reed, and Rick Harris, because they didn't have the resources. And what generally was there frequently ended up getting either broken or stolen. So there was a time when you look for the leadership from the Pacific Foundation and its board to intercede, to bring quality management in, and that quality management to bring systems and some professional oversight into a station that had fallen into small cliques, power cliques, that did not truly represent either the mission of BAI or to its local community board. And these powerful cliques didn't want to be budged. And many a times these people had the mindset of entitlement, that if they were on the air, they should be there for life. Well, as my brother Stephen pointed out in a discussion, and he is sitting with me in the studio today, and he has been a political activist his entire career, and also a researcher. In fact, if you look at all of the books that I wrote, it was with my brother dozens of years spent helping. In fact, right now he's helping with trying to bring medical supplies and important life-saving devices to different countries. He's done so in Dominican Republic, and he was also responsible for getting India, along with a group of activists, to get the lead out of the gasoline. He's doing the same thing now in Dominican Republic. Well, he's been also helping in the investigation. And he said, you know, the problem with everyone is, this is not the Supreme Court. When you're nominated to the Pacifica board, it's not for life. You know, these are not life entitlements. And the same thing being on the radio. The fact you're on the radio doesn't mean that it's yours. You can't die and will your show to your next of kin. These are fluid and dynamic programs. The nature of programming is that it can change and infrequently should change to represent the greater needs of the different communities. And that's been part of the problem. Part of the problem is that people come on the air and think this is for me and this is what I'm going to do. And then we have to ask, well, who does it benefit? Does it really benefit everyone? And are there other people who could do the same job and do it better? Have we, as a non-commercial broadcasting group of stations, have we sought out the best of any given type of voice to represent those individual interests, no matter what it is? And you and I all know that there are some wonderful voices and there are some less than wonderful voices on non-commercial radio. The trouble is, what happens if you need to replace someone, whether it's a station manager or an on-air person? You end up going into a civil war. It has never been easy to remove anyone from any position in the background of BAI. I'll give you one little example. I was sitting with a program director about 15 years ago, who there was a person who was a really terrible anti-Semite on the air. Many of our listeners will know, because I even had a group of rabbis meet with me to talk about how they were having trouble supporting, and they were all liberal, supporting WBAI at the time, because, and they weren't pledging. They would listen to my show, but they wouldn't listen to anything else, because there was a lot of hate radio on at that time, unfortunately. And I went to the program to asking, you know, does freedom of speech mean the freedom to say anything irrespective of how responsible or wrong it is? And he said, well, that's the problem. He said, you can't take someone off the air. He said, we've tried. It hasn't worked. And when he suggested this one person that if they were going to be anti-Semitic and racist against all Jews, no, they weren't just anti-Zionistic. They were just very rampantly anti-Semitic. Invite the other people on to give a chance to give their point of view. With that, the guy went ballistic, picked up a chair, and hit the program director, physically assaulted him. I'm sitting right there. I'm an eyewitness to this. And left. The guy was not fired. No charges were brought. Unfortunately, it was just the way things were done. So we have to ask ourselves, should we raise our standards on all levels? On conduct, objectivity, professionalism, and still be able to maintain the ideals for which this entire foundation was founded? Or should we be some people professional, others not, some responsible and others not, some wanting oversight and others being responsible when oversight is offered, and some people not wanting any oversight? Like, don't tell me what to do. I don't want to hear what you have to say, and if you do tell me, I'm going to get up in your face about it. These are many of the issues that we have to deal with in radio. We cannot compare ourselves with commercial radio, because in commercial radio, firing is done every day. I worked at WMCA, and 56 people were fired in 1 year. I also have come from that background of being on commercial radio as long as I've been on non-commercial radio, actually longer. And it's not about freedom of speech either. I have never once in my entire career been censored on commercial radio. There's never been a single issue I was not allowed to talk about. And sometimes I hear people saying it's only on non-commercial radio you can hear that. That has simply not been my experience. In fact, I know for a fact that special interest groups went out of their way to try to have me fired on ABC repeatedly. But the station program director, Mark Mason, to his credit, never once allowed that. And yet, even though I was the number one person in ratings on ABC, I beat Bob Grant, who I do not share his views at all. And I was the one liberal person on that station who had a voice. And on Sunday evenings, my ratings were so high. I was number one in the entire United States. There was not a single radio station that had higher ratings or brought in more money for the time slot per those hours and was paid less. I'll tell you exactly what I was paid. I was paid $154.44 a week by ABC Network, and I brought them in a fortune. In ratings, I was the only show to ever win awards. And yet, after all those years, John Minnelli came in, sat down with me one single time, and told me I was history. I said, okay. Yeah, you know, I have to accept that I may not like to leave, but if I'm given no choice, that's it. I was told that I had to leave WMCA, not because of anything I had done, highest ratings, best audience, lowest pay, so they headed all the way on their way. But the day that I was told, you have 2 hours to get out. And they had a security guard there to make sure I got out. All because, as it later turned out, Carlton Fredericks wanted my time and worked behind my back on the very day I did a four-hour tribute to that man. In his honor, he was taking my job. People don't know all about that. They don't know about the schemes of broadcasting. It can be a very ruthless environment. But again, I said, okay, my life doesn't stop with getting off the air. It goes forward. My life is more significant than a broadcast or radio program. So if you understand the very nature of broadcasting is there's going to be turnover, hirings and firings, and standards set, and at some point, we're all accountable to someone else. And non-commercial radio also has to have accountability. And the question is, the strength, objectivity, balance and fairness of that accountability system. Checks and balances. So management is not arbitrary and capricious, and the staff are not defiant purely for the sake of creating any form of self-serving chaos. And hence the need for balance and fairness. And I believe that's what all of us are looking for. Balance and fairness. There is nothing more frustrating than to hear someone talk about you when you're no longer on the air and say things that are either cruel or simply untrue. Then you feel this enormous sense of frustration. They have a form and you do not. So therefore you use the forms you have. Phones, faxes, emails, or you simply say it's just not significant. BAI is more important than any person, manager or on air or producer or technician. Pacifica is more important than any foundation member. And I'm asking for us now to start to engage in a constructive dialogue to understand that we must put together a program that takes us forward, and forward without attacks, forward without denunciations, forward without taking things out of context that can only be hurtful. In fact, in one of the allegations made, after I did an in-depth investigation, I found that that particular allegation was something that was said in a context that was meant to be constructive, and later, just like in a divorce, people look for anything that was said or done and look at how they can change the context. We have to get beyond taking things out of context. We have to look at achieving the foundation's goals, taking the mission to the highest level of quality and integrity. That's the purpose of this series, and it will be a series. Right now, I am planning that every Monday, for the foreseeable future, to have a forum, a platform for people who are both on the air and off the air. People from all sides. People who are the dissenting board members. For instance, next Monday, I intend to have on here, and he's agreed, Tomas Moron, board member, but I also have on another board member. So you hear different points of view. And for those who've heard only one side, that all these board members are corporate sellouts. They're lackeys for the multinational interest. They're only here to subvert the station, to sell it off. And then they'll have a chance to respond. They will have an opportunity to put it in perspective. They've had no voice. You've not heard any board member who's been attacked. And one in particular, I took months investigating the background of one board member who was being attacked, picketed at the person's home and business. Her computer files were hacked into, her private and confidential and proprietary lists of clients. And she's a small little business person. She's a minority business person. And they went to great lengths to try to, in effect, blackmail and extort her into resigning. I could find no evidence that she had in any way done anything to compromise her position in any way. The fact that she may have held a more progressive view should not have been grounds for the type of assault that has occurred. She will have a forum. And there should not be room in this dialogue for the radical fringes. I can promise you they will not be given a forum on my show. I have experienced myself, there have been people who have been threatened with death threats, extortions, blackmail. These are people who don't have a life. And you know something? They would love this conflict never to end. Because then, for the first time since the Vietnam War or some other thing, they have a purpose. They don't want healing. They thrive off chaos. These are chaos feeders. Do they represent the majority of voices? No. Most people within the different camps are responsible, caring, sincere, and truly impassioned people. The fact that they have different views is what we're going to try to understand. But please understand that those people who are trying to do the dirty work and have succeeded, they are not the voices of the proponents or opponents. I have yet to find any of the people who I've interviewed, from Al Lewis, who is an extraordinarily responsible human being, to Ken Ford, a board member too, who I also consider a responsible person. These are not people who want to hurt anyone or destroy anything, but they share different points of view. It's time that we heard their views in an open forum. Juan Gonzalez is coming on. I have many people coming on who will represent different platforms. And my guidelines are this. A, I allow no personal attacks. There will not be a second warning on that. In the history of my show, it has never been a forum for personal attacks. Secondly, let's keep it constructive and positive. It's perfectly acceptable to lay out what you feel the problems are in order to show your solution to those problems. Thirdly, what can help in the healing process? Now, here's the tricky part. In the end, this is not just going to be about, let's say, functional solutions. It's also going to have to be about political solutions. Because what if, for example, one person comes from a communist point of view? And I interviewed a communist, a very intelligent and, again, very sincere person who's worked at the station. And that person has seen it, been there, and was one of my independent confirmers of things I needed to know. I needed this for my background. You see, for the past 6 months, I've been doing all my homework not to do an expose. I wouldn't do that. That would be irresponsible. But rather, when I am providing a healing forum, at least I have the background to know when someone is telling the truth or not. Because I've already done the research. I know where the facts are. In fact, some of the people, dissidents I was talking with, were surprised at things they thought were absolute right on. And when I shared information, it made them stop and think. Well, maybe they have some so-called facts that are not facts. And so I'm asking them to re-examine some of their points of view based upon information I will share with them and with the evidence. And then if they say, just one example, and I'll give just one example only, what I'm talking about. I've been able to independently confirm and have absolute evidence that in the interview where Utrice Lead went into the studio when Major Owens, the congressperson, was on the air, he was not disconnected. He hung up. Now, if that's part of the argument about how, you know, he was censored, and that simply is not the case. And so I've taken an enormous amount of time to get facts. And that's why I've asked repeatedly, please stay neutral. Stay neutral and open until you hear all sides. And my job is, because I'm not beholden to anybody, and that anyone will tell you, and anyone who's listened to my program knows, I can't be bought, sold, or had. That's, you know, I've never done an endorsement, never done a... you know who I am, and you know why I do what I do. But I simply will listen to what someone has to say. I respect what they have to say. I'll write it down. I take notes. And then I try to see if it's true. Can I verify? Can I prove it? How many times have you heard me say, the first rule in science is disprove yourself. The second rule is see if someone else can disprove your point of view. And if you can disprove yourself or someone else can, then you didn't have anything other than a good hypothesis, but not a fact. And if nobody can disprove you and you can't disprove you, then you have the basis possibly of something you can be sustained for. And a lot of the arguments simply are not sustainable. So that's why I want to give you his background to this. I'm just giving you the background to set the stage that you're going to hear dozens of people on the air from all points of view in a positive, constructive forum to show you what we have to do to stop all this civil war, the hatred, the counterproductive antagonism. Look at Northern Ireland. Look at Israel. Look all over the world. You have conflict. The first step in conflict is to open up a dialogue. The second, once you realize what the issues are, at some point, someone has to extend an olive leaf. Someone has to give something up, and so you can start blending things together to have something that will go forward. If you have one person that says, we've got to have total local control, it's about localism, and someone else says, no, it's about national control, and someone says, we want to elect locally, we want to elect who's going to go on the radio, and someone else says, yeah, but what if you just have the radical element that does the electing, who are the most voracious, then you're just going to have radical voices on. Then someone else says, but you need to have it where it's all done by a single program director. Then who elects program director? These are all the issues we're going to be exploring. And maybe at the end of this process, or somewhere along the way, we'll be able to better understand how we might individually participate in this. My regular listeners, expecting health topics listening today, realize that these topics are important for now and for the future, and I will be continuing with this, but this is a forum that allows us to exist. And I might mention that on at least 17 occasions, they have made efforts in the past to remove me from the station. The trouble is, it was not the program director, and if the program director told me to leave, I would have to respect that. And I would find another voice or another forum, hopefully somewhere. These were small cliques, power cliques inside the station, who didn't like my audience, meaning you, didn't like me, for whatever the reasons. They would never dialogue with me. I've always extended an open policy, talk with people. So I have also been in the same situation as many of the people who have been removed from the air. I've been removed from the air. I've been removed from WOR, ABC, WMCA, and long ago, if it were up to the little power clicks over the years and years in the station, my air check tapes at one time were cut, destroyed. My mail, which is my private mail, was open and human feces put in it. Every single letter. Thousands of letters were thrown away. That's a federal offense. And yet, these people would do this and they got away with it. And people at the station knew who was doing this. They would take my signal. How many times have you heard the show before Mind Perfect, the show after Mind Perfect, and Mind hazy and staticky? And I later found out that people were changing the frequency. But I never brought all this up. I would take it to the appropriate people and offer them the information and hope that they would try to find a solution, understanding the political environment in which this was coming. I would like to see a station that is professionally managed, objective in its reporting, and programs that represent the true interest of a wide variety of the audience who are underserved. So that gives you enough about what this is about. This is an extended program today. We're going to be taking a lot of time. Our program is going over our normal. I won't be going through this every week. I'll just be going right to the individuals and giving them the forum. And so now let's go to our first person. Our first person on today's program is Bernard White. Bernard White is well known because he was the co-host of Wake Up, the morning show. He was also the program director. And he is here to share his information with us. Nice to have you with us today, Bernard.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Gary.
Bernard, I always invite anyone who I'm having on a program to challenge or take issue with any of the points I've raised up to this point and in my prologue to today's discussion, so I give you that opportunity now.
Well, there's one thing that sticks out, and that's the information about Major Owens. I think that although Major Owens might have been the one who actually hung up, I think that the situation that he found himself in was one that he was talking to no one, that the program was interrupted. And after repeatedly saying, hello, 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 is anybody there, he wound up hanging up. But I think what's key is that the program was disrupted and that it was taken over, and the host was dismissed, and another program was put in its place by the interim station manager.
Okay, that, and again, I wasn't looking at the context in which it was done. I was merely looking at the this specific fact, and the rest of that will be dialogued out with the people who were on. I'm inviting him on the air as well. And by the way, I'm inviting Major Owens on as well. Bernard, let's begin by taking a look at what you see the problems to be. And let's start with what you see the problems. I want to go from the problems to the solutions at WBAI.
Well, I think the problem initiated outside of WBAI, in that when there was a decision made by the national board that they would sever the relationship with the local advisory boards. This came out of the Pat Scott regime, when Pat Scott was the national executive director, and she convinced the board that they had to sever that relationship, that anyone who was a member of the local advisory board could not be on the national board. At the same time, running concurrent with that, there were discussions that were taking place to sell two of the radio stations, KPFA in Berkeley, as well as WBAI in New York. And this seemed to be an act that was a precursor to moving forward to the sale of these radio stations. As a matter of fact, there was an email that was sent incorrectly to a media group from Michael Palmer going to who was then the chair of the board, Mary Frances Berry, and it talked openly about an obvious discussion that an ongoing discussion that was being held about the sale of KPFA and WBAI. Michael Palmer stated that WBAI would probably be the most likely one to be sold because there were divisions amongst the staff and that it would be very easy to take over a WBAI. So once this decision was made that they would sever the relationship between the local advisory board and the national board, what happened was that the information which was flowing from the bottom, which would be the local advisory board, up through the national board, impacting on decision-making, that was taken out. So the only decision-making that was taking place at the top without any real input from the bottom, and you had people on the national board who are not familiar with community radio. Most of them don't have that as part of their work, their legacy of work. They have more in mind a corporate model, which is a top-down model, and that's the way that they've been behaving. So it would stand the reason that they would see nothing wrong with just reaching into a WBAI, snatching out a station manager in violation of the bylaws, in violation of the rules, which clearly state that in order to remove a station manager, it must be done in consultation with the local advisory board. This did not happen, as well as with the staff. So those things did not happen, but this is the kind of heavy-handedness that we've been seeing since these folks came onto the national board. Since December 22nd, we can see that this heavy-handedness has really been visited at WBAI. 21 people have been fired, banned, or removed from the air. 21 people who did not like what was going on, who spoke out against it, who some of whom didn't even get an opportunity to speak out against it. Me, Sharan Harper, who's the producer of Wake Up Call, were fired early in the morning, following the midnight coup that we call it, because that's what it was.
Why do you feel that you were fired?
I feel that I was fired for several reasons. One is because there was a dislike between the two major people who were involved in the coup of December 22nd. One is Bessie Wash, and the other is the interim station manager at WBAI right now, Yatrice Lee. I believe that there was a feeling that I may not go along with this the corporatization of WBAI. And there are many, and you'll see through your interviews that there's much evidence that that was in fact in motion. And they know that if I was there, that I would not stand for what's going on. Since this takeover, the radio station has just lost hundreds, if not thousands, of listeners. People who just cannot listen anymore. They're tired of the personal attacks that happen on a daily basis. I'm attacked, or the program that I was a part of was attacked on an absolute daily basis. And some of them are very, very, very vicious attacks.
Who has attacked you?
The morning show that's in place right now. The Paul DiRienzo has a special place in the legacy of attack. He has just been extremely vicious in his attacks. Lie after lie after lie. Every program that he has, he does. He just tells these lies. He even told a lie about the invasion of WBAI, how he was attacked by someone that was there. And we all know that this was not the case, that he was not stopping a marauding horde. An individual came up to the radio station long after the event took place, and he was attacked by Paul DiRienzo. You know, there are others that have joined in the attack. Clayton Riley has joined in the attack. You know, Bob Hennelly has joined in on the attack. These people have, rather than, you know, since they're there and they have the time to do a show, why don't they just do a show and let the people see? The people can tell. We have very, very intelligent listeners. And if they hear something that they want, then they will support it. But this is insupportable, and rather than recognize that they can't fix what it is they're doing because they really don't know how to, they wind up just attacking the individuals who are gone and don't have the ability to defend themselves.
All right. Now, Bernard, that would be frustrating for anyone to hear themselves being maligned or attacked. I've had that happen. We've all had that happen who are on or off the air. The question is this. Do you think that there was anything that you did leading up to the changeover that may have precipitated this? In other words, on your own show, did you say anything that would have caused a reaction?
Well, I would imagine that we had several teach-ins prior to this, one in which the now interim station manager participated in. We even had a teach-in that was planned on that Saturday morning. And the teach-in was going to be where we would bring in people from the media who had experience in the media, media experts, who would begin to talk about various media issues, of which Pacifica and WBAI was going to be a part. And I think that one of the reasons why there was a move that Friday, in addition to there just not being anybody around because of the Christmas Kwanzaa holidays, that there was some fear that if we did go to the air with this information, that it would be devastating in the sense that it would let people know clearly just what was going on with WBAI, and that we were a part of what's taking place in media, where the whole corporatization of media. So I think that might have precipitated this move against.
Was there a email sent out the day before by one of the supporters of this effort to suggest taking over the studios and actually having the names of individuals who would take over different people's offices?
Well, not as far as I know. You know,
I have that email.
Okay, but what has happened, you mentioned that email, and you probably could mention a lot more. In any struggle, there are people who are on the extremes. There are people who, some of whom I've just mentioned at WBAI, who are on the extreme. There are people who out in the public are on the extreme. We're talking about possibly 1 million people who listen to Pacifica. And out of that million people, yes, there are going to be some people who will be on the extreme, but they don't represent the soul and the engine of the movement and the mindset of the movement. Now, what had happened at WBAI is that we had several meetings, several staff meetings. One meeting, there was over 70 staff members. At another meeting, there was about 30, 35 staff members. And it was about 98% at each meeting decided that we had to do something as a staff to stop this illegal move by Pacifica, a move that was threatening to destroy our autonomy.
Okay, now the move you're talking about, so we put this in historical perspective, the move was to replace the station manager, Valerie Ann Issler.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Had you or other people recommended that Valerie be removed in the past?
Okay, let me finish my story first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That at this these meetings, we had an overwhelming majority, as I said, about 98% of the staff at each meeting, said that we needed to do something to stop this. So the staff broke into committees. The staff broke into committees. And they began to prepare to have teach-ins at the station on an ongoing basis as a way of, and all peaceful, I might add, that to say that they did not like what was about to take place. Now, to your question about whether or not I had, or whether there was it about me or was it about the staff?
The staff at various times recommending that Valerie Van Isser be removed.
Okay. What had happened with that is that there were times when we had serious conflict with the station manager. But it, as long as it stayed in-house, it was an in-house move. I had never been a part of any group or any memo or email or anything that went outside of the BAI circle to ask to remove the station manager. You know, we all have jobs, and I'm sure that I've worked on many jobs where I thought that the one who was considered to be the boss was just out of his or her mind. But that didn't mean that I would organize staff to try and take over the business.
Now, just I'm asking for a little broader answer on this, Bernard. Could you see that by Bessie Walsh wanting to replace Valerie Van Isser as the station manager, for whatever reason she chose, that may not have had anything to do with corporatizing or taking over BAI for any other reason? Have you examined that as a possibility that by circling the wagons around Valerie, this could have launched an entire challenge that it was action, reaction, action, reaction? Is that possible?
Yes, I have looked into that. And what I saw was that in December 22nd, as of the date that I was terminated, that WBAI has experienced unprecedented success. As a matter of fact, in the fall meeting of the national board, it was Bessie Walsh who praised Valerie Van Isler for taking us out of a $200,000 deficit and who, out of her own mouth, said that we had a $70,000 surplus. So I think...
That was Valerie or... I'm sorry, I didn't understand which one. Valerie or Bessie said that?
Bessie said that.
Bessie said that they had a $70,000 surplus.
At a fall national board meeting. In fact,
fall that year? Fall
of 2000.
2004, right?
As a matter of fact, they even gave her, from what I understand, a standing ovation. Oh, well, they applauded her, eradicating this deficit. We had the highest listenership that we've ever had. We had over 200,000 listeners. And this is using Arbitron, which is the industry-wide measuring tool that historically under-measures the people who listen to Pacifica Radio. So based on all of the objective criteria that they use to measure, BAI was doing very well. So the only reason that I could see for Bessie Wash moving in at that time was to satisfy some other desire, some other goal, which was outside of really straightening out the radio station.
Did you speak with Bessie Walsh during this period of time?
I made several calls to Bessie Walsh. And see, this is where, you know, she came on the air and said that she had been in town for weeks and that nobody had called her. Well, I have proof. I spoke directly to Andrea Sisco, who's a national board member. I got a number from Andrea Sisco to call Bessie Walsh. I called Bessie Walsh at least five times before I said, hey, Berna, wait a minute, what are you doing here? You're calling the people and she's not getting back to you, so I stopped calling her. She came into town and said that she was in town for a week and no one ever called her. That was untrue. She never returned the phone calls.
Okay, so you didn't meet with her, you didn't dialogue with her?
I dialogued with her early on, when Valerie Van Isler first got the letter. Matthew Finch and I met with her at her choice at the New York Hilton Hotel in the restaurant on the first floor. And we talked about this, her letter saying that she was going to remove Valerie Van Isler. I told her at that time, if you do that, first of all, you'll be taking away the autonomy of WBAI. The local radio stations must have autonomy. They must be able to design a radio station that best fits their particular locale, number one. Secondly, I told her that if you do this, that it would put into motion a firestorm that would not benefit Pacifica, that you would have the same kind of activities happening here that were precipitated in Berkeley when there was an attempt to take over the Berkeley radio station. And she told me that she was going to do this anyway.
Explain to the people what happened at Berkeley for a historical perspective on KPFA, because not everyone in this audience may appreciate the, what was it, the 28-day? 23-day lockout there. Just give them a little background on that from your perspective.
Well, what happened in Berkeley is that Pacifica, in a very heavy-handed way, went in and began to fire the staff, have them arrested. I think about 30 people or so were arrested at Berkeley. Dennis Bernstein, award-winning journalist, was arrested. It was captured on air because it was happening while the news was going on. There was really no reason to do this, but as I said, they're following other designs. Berkeley was speaking out against, some of the producers anyway, were speaking out against the direction that the National Board was taking, the decisions, some of the illegal decisions that they were making, and it seems that the National Board didn't like that and began to come in and try and clean house. So essentially that's basically what happened. Of course, there are other details, but that's basically what happened. They began to hire security guards. They wound up hiring a public relations firm so that they could explain away all of this. And they charged it all to the local radio station. At WBAI right now, a similar thing is happening. A surveillance system, which is going to cost between $30,000 and $50,000, is being installed, where there are going to be cameras all over the place, digital cameras, digital monitors, where people's movement can be seen. They can be followed throughout the building. Why? WBAI is right now in serious financial trouble. I don't know if it's been as serious, certainly in the last 10, 15 years, it hasn't been as serious as it is now. The listeners have rejected the programming. They've rejected what has happened at the radio station and the manner in which it happened, and they have made a decision to withhold their funds. Of course, the withholding of funds by the on-air people is being they target just a handful of people as being responsible for the withholding of funds. But our listeners are intelligent enough to recognize that they're not going to finance what it is that they don't like. And they've made a very loud statement that they're not going to support what is happening at WBAI. So I think that that is a reason enough to recognize that there is an immediate solution that can happen, and that is that the people who have been imposed by Pacifica, that they, it would probably be a good thing if they were to leave. We need to have this situation reversed. Pacifica needs to send to all of the radio stations a declaration that they will not interfere into the internal operations of the station again, unless they follow, you know, unless they're following the established procedure. I can't see any other way out. I can't see how this can stand. It happened, as I said, illegally, and we have seen that this on-air daily campaign of hatred and vilification is reason enough why these folks need to go.
I certainly believe people will respect the idea that there should be no attacks on the air. It is counterproductive, it's bad radio, and also it's not fair. And I would hope that from this day forward that people refrain from making any statement about someone who's no longer there. It is only going to cause reactions that are not acceptable for a healing process. Also, I found that so often people are attacking each other without ever having spoken with each other. On both sides, by the way, Bernard. This has happened. I've spoken with board members. In fact, I spoke with one board member, and this is, I'll go on the record with this one because I think this is rather a unique situation. You mentioned her name, and since you mentioned her name, I'll bring it up a little bit. You were talking about Andrea, and Andrea, I spent a long time looking into her background. Now, do you have anything, any hard data that you could share with us that would justify the attacks against her that have been absolutely merciless, including she's been attacked by blackmail and harassed and her phone's jammed and people trying to get the people that she does business with to stop doing business with her, threatening her livelihood? Do you have any evidence that she deserves this? And if so, please present that evidence at this time.
Well, I don't know if she deserves that, but I do know that she was a member of the local advisory board. And when the vote was taken on the national board, the local advisory board asked her and Frank Milspaugh, who has since resigned, to vote against severing that relationship. And Andrea Sisco decided that she would go along with the majority and vote to sever that relationship. So the local advisory board immediately sent out a letter that she be removed from the national board for not for their reasons. And she did not remove herself. In addition to that, from what I understand, I don't have the facts in front of me, but she has voted with that majority since she has become a part of the national board.
Have you spoken to her about the nature of her votes or why?
Yes.
And what has she told you about why she's voted for these issues?
Well, she told me that, well, I talked to her about just last week, as a matter of fact, about why she voted to sever that relationship. And she told me that it wasn't just her, that it was the majority of board members.
But what
that
reason?
Everybody, that it was a unanimous vote. So it
based on what?
Why was it unanimous?
No. What was the rationale? There's a reason why people do things, and I'm interested in the reason.
Oh, I never got her reason for it.
She's an African-American woman with a PhD who has spent her entire professional career helping minorities, women in the workplace. I, without her knowing it, without ever talking with her, I interviewed dozens of people who had worked with her or on projects, and she was the one who, in 1996, took it upon herself at her own time
to do a listener survey.
The listener survey.
I remember it.
And, no one did anything with it. After all that effort, the station management decided not to bother with it, which was unfortunate. And I have to ask, if someone has spent so much time and effort trying to work as a volunteer, and let us remember something, every one of those board members, whether they're more conservative or progressive or liberal or radical, no matter what, they're all there as volunteers. There's no personal financial enrichment. That's not why they're there.
Well, Gary, I'm not sure, because there's been a move. Oh, by the way, there's one other thing I wanted to mention that you mentioned earlier. John Murdoch has been on the air. In fact, he was on the air with Juan Gonzalez during a Democracy Now.
But you know why he was on the air? No one, they had been attacked and no one had spoken with him. The people who had attacked him had never called him and personally spoke with him. I verify that independently of all people. So I've got to ask a question here. If I were being attacked constantly in every possible medium as being a corporate shill just trying to sell the stations, and no one ever called me and asked for any, you know, what's my opinion, what's my proof, why did I say something, why did I write something, I'd be concerned.
Well, I know some people that called John Murdoch.
Not the people who attacked him, not the people on the air. I verified that.
No, I don't know. You know, is it an attack when you raise where a person works and what that job does? Is that an attack? I think people were describing the work, the daily work of some of these board members, and I don't see that's always an attack. He works for...
Well, it depends upon the context in which you're using it. If you're saying that because someone is associated with a business that does business with other people who are corporations, and if that's the basis of saying that they're a corporate raider, look very carefully, because some of those people who have been attacked are supposed to be the corporate pawns, are struggling little business people. And that's part of the ideological drift that we have here, is do we have room... Is it possible to have room for people who are both successful and professional and those who are, let's say, more socialist or whatever, and who have a different philosophy concerning economics?
Well, let me ask you this. John Murdoch is on the governance committee. He heads up the governance committee. And he has put forth some bylaw changes. These bylaw changes, if they are passed, will allow the board members to personally benefit from the sale of the radio stations.
Hal, I've asked for that documentation. Have you seen the actual documentation on that?
Yes, in fact, it's up on the web.
I've seen what's on the web, and I have challenged John Murdoch on that. Have you spoken with John Murdoch on that?
No, I haven't. But what I was saying, in saying that, I'm saying that here is an indication of the mindset. The whole idea that someone would put forth that a Pacifica director be, and his family or her family, be personally compensated for the sale of a radio station becomes an incentive to sell the radio station. We're talking about in this New York market that BAI could go for like $200 million. If you just got 2% of that, 5% of that, that's a lot of money.
That's not what I understood that to be. And again, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be having John Murdoch on, so he'll have a chance to explain his position, because I ask him the same questions. But I don't feel that it's right for me to be giving his point of view. He again, the nice thing about this forum we're doing, we can raise these questions, which are important and should be raised. They're legitimate questions, Bernard. I absolutely agree with you. And then when I ask him, how would they benefit and who would benefit, and was there really an honest effort to sell the stations, I will tell you just one little as just one little note here. Because and a little background, people. By the way, for those of you who are just joining us, I'm Gary Knoll, and we're up to the end of our first hour, and we're going to take just a brief station identification, And we're going to come right back. Bernard White's on the phone. And we'll be continuing this forum in just 30 to 40 seconds. Please stay with us.